All right, welcome to another evening with Zion's Trumpet. Yours truly, Brother Daniel. How's everybody doing out there in Pal Talk Land this evening? Is everybody doing okay? Good, 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 great. Well, praise the Lord. Well, does anybody have anything to share? I'm going to open the mic up right away here. I thought somebody might have something to share before we start, and I wasn't sure. Okay. Looks like we got Johnny and Jennifer. Go ahead, you got the mic.
Hey, we finally figured out how to lock it on without holding the button on. I assume it's working. It says transmitting. This week, Jennifer and I have just had a blessed week. And one of the things that I got this week, or we got, was we both, for some reason, had a cross-reference that come back either on the same page or opposite page of Isaiah 55:1. And I'll read the few verses there. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the water. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine, milk, without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? And listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear, and your soul shall live. And as soon as I spotted that, everyone who thirsts, I told Jennifer, I've got a song like that in my book. So that's what that led to, was I found this song in my book, so I'll do the song, Isaiah 55:1. Oh, if you're thirsty, come to the water. You could have no money, come buy and eat wine, milk, and honey. Yeah, come now and feed your soul and your spirit, all that you need. His ways are the ways of the truth and perfection, not like the ways of a man. His thoughts are the thoughts of a stranger to you. Just listen and you'll understand. He'll fill up your belly with goodness if you live by his word every day. Your soul will rejoice in his fatness every step of the way. Oh, thirsty, come to the water. You can have no money, come by and eat wine, milk, and honey. Come now and feed your soul and your spirit with all that you need. Now why will you spend all your money till you're hungry deep down inside? And why will you work your long life away and still you're not satisfied? Why not change the life you've been living, or get it and leave it behind? Return, Lord, in his mercy he'll give you the pardon you're needing to find. Yes, oh, if you're thirsty, come to the water. You can have no money, come by and eat wine, milk, and honey. Come now and feed your soul and your spirit all that you need.
I think Jennifer's got a word too here.
Well, hello everyone. It's really nice. Actually, it's a blessing to be here again. And like Johnny said, we've been reading, and especially in the Old Testament, and it's exciting to get to know God in with his strict obedience and mercy and love, forgiveness, and his wrath. It is truly amazing. I'm just so thankful for this gift of salvation and the opportunity to go on to perfection. And I just encourage you all to believe on the Lord Jesus and to bring us to this completion. So bless you all, and that's all.
Amen. Well, thanks for sharing that, Johnny. And you too, Jennifer. Thanks for sharing. Does anybody else have anything to share before we start? Okay. Well, maybe afterwards, people have something to share. I just want to share kind of this week that how Christian Zionists are being kind of demonized. Of course, you all know that today the nation of Israel is facing a very dangerous situation. For many years, the question regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been a question of how much land a Jewish state should have versus how much land the new Palestinian state should have. And that's what everybody's quabbling over, the how much land. But in recent years, the question has been shifting from how much land each state should have to whether or not there should even be a Jewish state. And more politicians around the world right now are not saying it openly, but they're saying it in secret meetings and closed meetings. They're saying that the creation of Israel was a historical mistake that has to be corrected in order for the Palestinians to receive justice. And the nation of Israel today is hated by the entire world. It's hated so intensely, so radically is this hatred that nothing Israel does is good enough for the world to avoid scathing denunciations by the world. Whenever Israel reacts against the senseless slaughter of its civilian population, the world accuses it of provocation. Yet the world says nothing about Palestinians or pro-Palestinian organizations who train terrorists, who arm them, who provide logistical support for them so they can carry out their homicide bombings. Nothing said about that. Just when Israel tries to defend itself, everybody rises up and hollers at Israel, condemns Israel. When Israel arrests Palestinians who have already carried out terrorist attacks or who are about to do so and they find out, the whole world complains and talks about how about the Israeli injustices to Palestinians. Yet that same world is silent when, like, for instance, Palestinians will overrun a local police station where they suspect a collaborator is, somebody collaborating with Israel. And they'll overrun that whole police station, pull that Palestinian out that's merely suspected of collaborating, and disembowel them in public. No one says a word about that. No one says a word about the women and children who sit there and watch that kind of stuff and cheer. That kind of barbarity, that kind of brutality. Palestinians in Gaza can fire Scud missiles into civilian population centers of Israel every single day for 8 years straight, killing women and children, and the world says nothing, remains completely silent. But after 8 years, when Israel finally decides to put an end to that terrorism, the world rises up in indignation and accuses it of murdering innocent Palestinians, of overreacting, of using disproportionate power and all that kind of stuff. They accuse Israel deliberately targeting civilians, even though it's not true. And even now, 8 years later, the Palestinians themselves have come out and admitted that Israel used great restraint in that war and took great care in order not to harm the civilians in Gaza, and that the mass majority of the people they killed were combatants, not civilians. Even after that, the world remained silent. None of the thousands of talking heads, none of the reporters, none of the media outlets have retracted any of the wild accusations they printed for months during and after that war. Okay, the world hates the Jews. That's all there is to it. And nothing the Jews do will be good enough ever for the world except suicide. Pro-Israel Christians, we often like to point out the fact that the tiny nation of Israel, 6.5 million, could never have successfully stopped 275 million Arabs from destroying them all these years, unless God was helping and protecting them. And that's certainly true. But in light of the fact that the entire world demonstrates its deep-seated anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism every single day, 24 hours a day, the real ratio is more like 6.5 million Israelis against 6 billion of the rest of the world. That's the real ratio that's going on here. It's the Israelis against the whole world. Only the United States supported Israel on a consistent basis over the years, and even that support has been largely self-serving. Internationally, Israel has been our surrogate in that part of the world to counter the influence of the Soviet Union. But after the supposed collapse of the Soviet Union under Reagan, Israel quickly began changing from being an asset to the United States to a liability to the United States. Nationally, support for Israel exists in this country mainly because politicians need the Jewish and evangelical Christian votes to get elected. And you find this is true because once you get it around some bureaucrats who don't have to worry about being elected anymore, their attitude towards Israel changes. And they're not so pro-Israel after all. They were just pro-Israel to get elected. The American State Department is a good example of this too. Ever since World War I, the State Department of the United States has sided with the Arab positions 9% of the time. And the only reason America has consistently carried out a pro-Israel policy all those years is because what the White House and the Congress regularly steps in to combat and to counter the State Department's pro-Arab agenda. But of course, all that changed when Hussein Obama was elected. We now have an Islamist leader sitting in the White House, and the State Department is finally having its own way. And I get sick and tired of hearing these conspiracy websites. The Jews own the media. The Jews own the country. The Jews own Congress. The Jews own the White House. Anybody who continues to propagate now that the Jews control the government, they are mindless idiots. It's morons. The racial hatred of Jews blinds them to present political realities, which is that Islam is taking over the White House. Islam is taking over the Senate. Barack Hussein Obama has put hundreds and hundreds of Islamists in top-level positions all through his cabinet. The FBI is scared to show any kinds of films that actually expose true Islam. The FBI tried to show a film 2 weeks ago that exposed the truth of Islam. Care threw a fit, threatened to take him to court, and they backed off and they won't show that film anymore. This country is under the thumb of Islamists, not of Jews. And anybody who's still ranting about Jewish control of the media, Jewish control of Congress, they're stupid scumbags. Soon enough, they're going to realize that they're wrong. Fact is, the world has always hated the Jews, and the visible church hasn't been much better. The only time the world evidenced something other than blind hatred for Jews was immediately after the Holocaust. After the massacre of European Jewry, the nations had a brief, and I mean very brief, moment of self-appraisal, and they realized they had been an accomplice to the most massive genocide this planet has ever seen. And they felt responsible to do something about it to help the survivors. And as they sought a way to compensate the Jews for what they took part in, all the nations took part in it. The Jews asked for a state of their own, and the nations agreed. However, between the end of World War II in 1945 and the actual vote to establish a Jewish state in 1948, the world's conscience was hardened again, and there's every indication that the leaders of the United Nations never intended for the new Jewish state to live very long. When you look at what happened, what was said, what they gave them, it's very clear they didn't expect a Jewish state to live very long. In November 1947, the United Nations General Assembly adopted Resolution 181, which partitioned what was left of Mandate Palestine, which was only 17% of the original mandate. They partitioned that 17% into a Jewish and Arab state. And the Jewish state would be a ragged, narrow slice of land so empty of critical mass, which makes it indefensible, and empty of natural resources, including water, that state was clearly designed to disappear. Moreover, with the pre-pledged enemies so massive, millions, hundreds of millions of enemies guaranteed to attack it, see, the nations just assumed that the new state couldn't possibly survive more than a few weeks. Even before the historic UN vote, Arab statesmen had stood up and publicly declared their resolve to destroy Israel by all possible means. On November 30th, 1947, the Arab League publicly stated its program for the occupation of Palestine. They used that term, occupation of Palestine, by the armies of the Arab League and the forcible prevention of the establishment of the Jewish state. Also on November 30th that same year, Dr. Hussein Khalid of the Palestine Higher Committee called for a holy war to be waged on the Jews in Palestine, vowing that partition would lead to an Islamic crusade against them. On April 10th, 1948, the Security Council itself stated, armed Arab bands from neighboring Arab lands have infiltrated the territory of Palestine and together with local Arab forces are defeating the purpose of the partition resolution by acts of violence. So the United Nations knew exactly what was going on. On May 15, 1948, everybody knows that that's the day Israel proclaimed its independence. And on that day, the regular armies of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, along with troops from Saudi Arabia and Yemen, attacked Israel, and the UN did absolutely nothing. It just observed. The major nations that made up that body at that time, they knew precisely what the Arab Muslim nations were saying, what they were planning, and what they were capable of doing. They knew the manpower, they knew the armor, the artillery, the aircraft of each of these Arab Muslim nations, and they also knew what the fledgling Jewish state did not have in manpower and weapons and so on. And they knew the Jews didn't have any funds to purchase new weapons either. And to compound the weakness of the Jewish state, the UN, intervening to establish Israel, turned around and voted to embargo arms to all the, quote, combatants in the Middle East. Okay, so they're trying to act impartial, neutral. And they say, okay, we're going to embargo arms to the Arabs. We're going to embargo arms to the Jews. We're not going to give arms to anybody. Of course, the Muslim Arab states at that time are already well armed. They already had standing trained armies. And Israel's cut off from purchasing weapons. And despite the vote to embargo arms to the, quote, combatants, virtually nothing was withheld from the Arab nations. Just as Britain helped arm the Arabs before they left Palestine, took arms away from the Jews when they found them, gave arms to the Arabs, gave arms their positions when they abandoned them. That's the same way the world treated the state of Israel after it was declared. They had an embargo on arms, yet the Arabs could still go and buy arms anywhere. But the Jews, nobody would say anything for the Jews. This world is wicked, people. Wicked. All that's well known. It's well documented. Everybody expected the Jewish state to just be annihilated. Israel had to scrounge the junkyards of Europe for old World War I and World War II equipment. When they could find somebody who would sell them anything, they charged exorbitant prices. See, there's no doubt in the mind of the United Nations at that time, or the Arabs for that matter, that the Jewish problem would soon be solved. Except for the vote that gave Israel the spark of life, the Jews of Israel understood that they were on their own. No nation would assist them. No nation would rescue them. The one thing that the UN hadn't reckoned on, though, was the divine intervention of the God of Israel on Israel's behalf. And so regardless of man's plans, God made sure the new Jewish state was not destroyed. Now, one thing the average person doesn't understand about the Muslim world is that in the Quran teaches Muslims that they're the best race on the planet. The Quran is a very racist book. It teaches Muslims they're the best race. And these people almost conquered the entire world. I don't know if people realize this, but except for if it wouldn't have been for one battle in Europe that stopped them, they would have conquered the entire world, but they were stopped. But even though they were stopped, they didn't lose face because they had conquered so much territory in an incredibly short amount of time. So they didn't lose face even though they were stopped. They had all that territory they had conquered. But you see, when the Ottoman Empire was beat and the infidel pagan nations came and divided up the Ottoman Empire and had control over all that land that used to be Muslim, the Arab world lost face. Their face was blackened. Their pride was really wiped out. Well, they saw 1948 as a way to get back some of their pride. They're going to defeat the Jews and restore some of their self-esteem. And everybody's mind, all the problems with the Jews and all the problems the Jews caused, would be settled by this coming war. And, of course, there'd be no opportunity for rescue because there's no mercy from the Arabs, except maybe for a token, you know, maybe a token arrival, some troops that would find a handful of Jews left, and they would congratulate themselves because they rescued a handful while the rest were butchered. You know, that's the duplicity and hypocrisy of the world. That's how it operates. But something happened which stalled the world and disrupted your expectations. And when the Arab armies attacked, the untrained Jewish remnants from the graveyards of Europe fought back with junk equipment and miraculously beat the combined, vaunted Arab-Muslim armies. You can't imagine what kind of humiliation this was to the Arabs. These Jews had nothing. When you read some of the things they did, all the bluffs they made, they had almost nothing to fight the Arabs with. Two or three planes. I mean, a small amount of guns. We were watching one thing one time about Israel, and it told how they were a bunch of tanks going to invade one of these kibbutzes. And they had no weapons to fight back. and they had a couple guns they loaded on the Jeeps. And they had a plane. They had one or two planes. They had one of these planes fly around and drop bottles, actual bottles of soda water that fizzed and popped when they dropped. They had no bombs, nothing like that. They actually, this plane drove over and dropped these bottles of fizz water that went on the way down. And then when it hit the ground, it's nothing. It's just a bottle of fizz water. But the sound of going on the way down would scare the Arabs. They think it was a bomb dropping. That's the kind of stuff that Jewish people had to do. To bluff their way through because they had nothing. But God was with them and God helped them. And 1948 was a defeat. The average person just can't imagine what kind of humiliation 1948 is in the Muslim world. You just can't imagine it. This little ragtag army had nothing. Beat all those Arab armies. Well, you know what they did? They went back and said that the reason they lost was because the American army and the American Air Force joined in the fight, and that's why they lost, which is a complete fabrication. You know, America wouldn't even help the Israelis, okay? I mean, surely they said the Jews couldn't have defeated the holy warriors of Allah by themselves, that little ragtag army. They couldn't have defeated these, you know, all the great Allah, these warriors. But they did. And so they said, oh, somebody must have helped them. The Americans helped them. The masses believed it. They believed that lie. And so their self-images was protected, okay? Well, you all know the history. There was five more wars where the Arabs gambled away their land in an effort to overrun Israel and drive them into the sea. They continued to proclaim that they're going to occupy all the land of historic Palestine. They're going to ignore the U.S. The UN petition, and Islam would eventually triumph. They're going to murder all the Jews. So all these wars, okay, each time Israel won a war and took land from the Arabs, they had gambled away. The nation step and cry, oh, no, 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 no. Return the land, and perhaps the Arabs will right to exist. You'll be surprised how much land Israel has returned to the Arabs since 1948. Maybe I'll go over that next week. You'd be shocked. So the world stands up and says, oh, no, give back the land that you won, or at least some of it, and maybe the Arabs will recognize you. And then there's international lawyers. They concoct arguments that applied only to Israel, which would allow aggressor nations to attack Israel, and yet expect to get their land back if they lost? This stuff is insane. It's insane hypocrisy. Every time the Arabs tried to drive Israel into the sea, and Israel started winning the war, well, the nations would call for a ceasefire. They'd force the Jews to stop their advances, and that would ensure the rescue of the Arabs from a complete defeat or a complete surrender, which would probably produce a peace treaty. See, if Israel was ever allowed to completely defeat these people in war, they'd have to sign a treaty with them. And so the nations themselves are the biggest obstacle to peace because they stop Israel. Every time there's a war and Israel goes, like one time they went all the way to Damascus, they could have taken the whole country. And if they would have let the Jews win that war, there could have been peace because they would have said, you will not get your country back until you sign a peace treaty. And they would have signed it. But see, the nations stop Israel from completing their victories because they don't want the Jews to win. And in so doing, their racist ignorance prevents peace from happening. Yet those same nations, on several occasions when Israel was attacked and it looked like it was going to be annihilated, of course, those same nations said nothing. They didn't stand up to the Arabs and say, wait a minute, don't completely destroy them. Don't take their land. Oh, no, they said nothing. Because deep down in their hearts, they hate the Jews. And they would be happy to see another 6 million die. 60 years after the founding of Israel, the Jewish people were there faced the same enemies they did in 1948. The UN, the European Union, the entire Arab Muslim world, everyone wants Israel to perish. Everyone wants Israel to allow the creation of a terrorist Muslim state in its underbelly, in its heart of its nation, to soften it up for the final solution. That's what they want. And I'm telling you, that's why God's going to slaughter them like dogs. The wickedness of the nations, especially regarding Israel, is truly, truly mind-boggling. You can't imagine the wickedness, the duplicity, the monumental outrageous lies that are being told on Israel. The nations hate the Jews because they hate the God of the Jews. If they could, they'd murder God himself. And they also have a special contempt for Christians who support Israel. Just as Israel is being delegitimized and demonized, so Christians who support Israel are being delegitimized and demonized right now. Pro-Israel Christians are increasingly being portrayed as bloodthirsty killers who control both the U.S. Congress and American foreign policy, and they're using their political clout to block, to stop Middle East peace efforts because they want the apocalypse to come. They're waiting for the apocalypse, not for peace. See, we're increasingly being portrayed as enemies of humanity because we support Israel. This week we watched a documentary called Waiting for Armageddon. I'm going to put it up on my website so you can all see it. Waiting for Armageddon. I think it's an important film to watch because it makes you realize just how much the people, the nations of this world, and also apostate Christians, hate truth and hate the God of truth. The film interviews several evangelical families, as well as a few theologians and pastors, who openly share their beliefs about the last days. These are evangelicals, they're dispensationalists, they're pre-trib rapture people, okay? Now, these people in the film, they're not strange, they're not weird. The families are very normal. They all speak very intelligently. But then that's the whole point of the film. The whole point of the film is to show that these Christians who take the prophecies of the Bible literally, they're not some kind of fringe element along the edges of the evangelical church. There's 50 million of them in America, and they're smart, they're articulate, they're serious, and they're committed. Of course, that makes them all the more dangerous because these people are getting elected as political positions that can affect the foreign policy of America. And if they gain enough power, they're going to try and bring the U.S. foreign policy into line with their what's called apocalypse theology. See, everybody that believes the literal prophecies of the Bible and they believe what Revelation actually says is going to come to pass, that's now being referred to as apocalypse theology. So they're afraid that these 50 million evangelical Christians are going to get in the U.S. foreign policy and line up with their apocalypse theology, and the end result is going to be a kind of self-fulfillment of all the last day prophecies they believe. And see, all this is directly linked to support for Israel. Because according to dispensational and pre-tribulation rapture doctrine, you know, the Jews had to be back safely and securely back in their land, apocalypse can begin. So we're being spun as enemies of humanity because we support the Jews. And the Jews are an integral part of the apocalypse. One reviewer of that movie puts it this way. He says, quote, "Waiting for Armageddon tells its story through the eyes of three evangelical families who are certain that upon Christ's second coming, they will be raptured or lifted into the skies to join Christ while the rest of humanity suffers for 7 years during the tribulation. The film then follows a Christian study tour group to Israel. The tourists are baptized in the River Jordan, sing the U.S. national anthem on the Sea of Galilee, proclaim love for Israel, and describe how the Dome of the Rock, one of the holiest sites in Islam, must be destroyed in order for Jesus to return. A controversial, potentially explosive relationship between Christian evangelicals, Jews, and Muslims emerges. At an evangelical conference in Dallas, Texas, the film's characters urge others to spread biblical literalism, biblical, if you take the Bible literally, and to counter the dangerous effects of postmodernism. The climax of the gathering comes as Pastor John Hagee, the enormously influential Texas minister of an 18,000-member megachurch, declares World War III has started. Okay, so those who take Bible prophecy literally, at least think it can be taken literally, they're not going to see anything wrong with the statements of the people in this movie that are being interviewed, except, of course, for the pre-trib rapture error, you know. But, I mean, otherwise, what they're saying is perfectly normal and right and biblical. This movie is not directed at Christians, though. This movie is directed at secular, multicultural, humanistic people who love this world and love their own life. And those kind of people are horrified and, in fact, infuriated when they realize that so many Christians in America can't wait for their world and their lives to be destroyed. You see, and the same applies to cultural Christians, pseudo-Christians, apostate Christians, and any kind of Christian who's not laying down their life. They're going to feel the same way. So suddenly, Bible-believing Christians who take the Bible literally were beginning to look like the enemies of mankind. This is going on in the secular realm. It's also going on in the religious realm. This same reviewer continues. He says this. He says, "My first impression watching the film is, do we really have to pay attention anymore to these clowns after the last election. Here are all the fundamentalist wingnuts, again, trotting out their end-of-days prophecies, their hatreds, and perverted